Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu next arrived at the place of Madhvacharya, where the philosophers known as Tattvavadis resided. He stayed there at a place known as Udupi, where he saw the deity of Lord Krishna and became mad with ecstasy. Sripad Madhvacharya took his birth in Udupi, which is situated in the South Kannada district of South India, just west of Sahyadri. This is the chief city of South Kannada province and is near the city of Mangalore, which is situated to the south of Udupi. In the city of Udupi is a place called Pajaka Kshetra, where Madhvacharya took his birth in a Shivali Brahmana dynasty as the son of Majjagehabhut in the year 1040 of Shakabda. According to some, he was born in the year 1160 Shakabda. In his childhood, Madhvacharya was known as Vasudev, and there are some wonderful stories surrounding him. It is also said that his father piled up many debts, and Madhvacharya converted tamarind seeds into actual coins to pay them off. When he was 5 years old, he was offered the sacred thread. One demon named Maniman lived near his abode in the form of a snake, and at the age of 5, Madhvacharya killed that snake with the toe of his left foot. When his mother was very disturbed, he would appear before her in one jump. He was a great scholar even in childhood, and although his father did not agree, he accepted sannyas at the age of 12. After receiving sannyas from Achyuta Preksha, he received the name Purnapragya Tirtha. After travelling all over India, he finally discussed scriptures with Vidyashankara, the exalted leader of Sringeri Math. Vidyashankara was actually diminished in the presence of Madhvacharya. Accompanied by Satya Tirtha, Madhvacharya went to Badarik Ashram. It was there that he met Vyasadeva and explained his commentary on Bhagavad Gita before him. Thus he became a great scholar by studying before Vyasadeva. By the time he came to the Ananda Math from Badarik Ashram, Madhvacharya had finished his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. His companion, Satya Tirtha, wrote down the entire commentary. When Madhvacharya returned from Badarik Ashram, he went to Ganjama, which is on the bank of the river Godavari. He met there with two learned scholars named Shobhanabhat and Swami Shastri. Later, these scholars became known in the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya as Padmanabha Tirtha and Narahari Tirtha. When he returned to Udupi, he would sometimes bathe in the ocean. On such an occasion, he composed one prayer in 5 chapters. Once, while sitting beside the sea, engrossed in meditation upon Lord Sri Krishna, he saw that a large boat containing goods for Dwarka was in danger. He gave some signs by which the boat could approach the shore, and it was saved. The owners of the boat wanted to give him a present, and at the time Madhvacharya agreed to take some Gopi Chandan. He received a big lump of Gopi Chandan, and as it was being brought to him, it broke apart and revealed a large deity of Lord Krishna. The deity had a stick in one hand and a lump of food in the other. As soon as Madhvacharya received the deity of Krishna in this way, he composed a prayer. The deity was so heavy that not even 30 people could raise it. Madhvacharya personally brought this deity to Udupi. Madhvacharya had 8 disciples, all of whom took sannyas from him and became directors of his 8 monasteries. Worship of the Lord Krishna deity is still going on at Udupi, according to the plans Madhvacharya established. Madhvacharya then, for the second time, visited Badarik Ashram. While he was passing through Maharashtra, a local king was digging a big lake for the public benefit. As Madhvacharya passed through the area with his disciples, he was also obliged to help in the excavation. After some time, when Madhvacharya visited the king, he engaged the king in that work and departed with his disciples. Often, in the province of Ganga Pradesh, there were fights between Hindus and Mohammedans. The Hindus were on the one bank of the river and the Mohammedans on the other. Due to the community tension, no boat was available for crossing the river. The Mohammedan soldiers were always stopping passengers on the other side. But Madhvacharya did not care for these soldiers. He crossed the river anyway, and when he met the soldiers on the other side, he was brought before the king. The Mohammedan king was so pleased with him that he wanted to give him a kingdom and some money. But Madhvacharya refused. While walking on the road, he was attacked by some dacoits, but by his bodily strength, he killed them all. When his companion, Satyatirtha, was attacked by a tiger, Madhvacharya separated them by virtue of his great strength. When he met Vyasadeva, he received from him the Shalagram Shila known as Ashtamurti. After this, he summarized the Mahabharata. Madhvacharya's devotion to the Lord and his erudite scholarship are known throughout India. Because of this, the owners of the Sringeri Math established by Shankaracharya became a little perturbed. At that time, the followers of Shankaracharya were afraid of Madhvacharya's rising power, and they began to tease Madhvacharya's disciples in many ways. There was even an attempt to prove that the disciplic succession of Madhvacharya was not in line with Vedic principles. One person named Pundarik Puri, a follower of the Mayavad philosophy of Shankaracharya, came before Madhvacharya to discuss the Shastras. It is said that all of Madhvacharya's books were taken away, but later they were found with the help of King Jayasingha, ruler of Kumla. In discussion, Pundarik Puri was defeated by Madhvacharya. A great personality named Trivikramacharya, who was a resident of Vishnumangala, became Madhvacharya's disciple, and his son later became Narayanacharya, the composer of Sri Madhva Vijaya. After the death of Trivikramacharya, the younger brother of Narayanacharya took sannyas and later became known as Vishnu Tirtha. At that time, it was reputed that there was no limit to the bodily strength of Purnapragya Madhvacharya. There was a person named Kadanjari who was famed for possessing the strength of 30 men. Madhvacharya placed the big toe of his foot upon the ground and asked the man to separate it from the ground, but the great strong man could not do so even after great effort. Srila Madhvacharya passed away from this material world at the age of 80 while writing a commentary on the Aitareya Upanishad. For further information about Madhvacharya, one should read Madhva Vijaya by Narayana Acharya. Now, I'm not going to finish the purport, it's so long, but it continues with a long list of Mutt commanders. There's actually 45 of them. They all have various names. It's quite interesting to note that at a certain point, the names all changed to name words beginning with Satya, Satyavrata, Satyanidhi, Satyanath, and so forth. But there's a list of 45. And the purport concludes, to date, in the Udupi monastery, there are another 14 Madhvatirtha sannyasis. As stated, Udupi is situated in South Canada, about 36 miles north of Mangalore. It is situated beside the sea. This information is available from the South Canada Manual and the Bombay Gazette. It's kind of interesting. He seems to have got the information from the Bombay Gazette. But of course, it ties in with Madhva Vijaya, which is the authorized biography of Madhvacharya. Om Agyana Timaranda Shya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktivrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So I request the blessings of all the devotees. As I was preparing for this, I was reading how Madhvacharya took sannyas at 12 years old. And I was thinking, okay, 45, 46, and there's no sign of any diminishing in my attachment to the material world. So trying to understand the great consciousness, the great life and activities of Madhvacharya, it's from someone like myself, it's like, as they say, the dwarf trying to catch the moon. I can't possibly understand the great spiritual prowess of Madhvacharya. Now, what is the meaning of Acharya? Now, recently it was Advaita Acharya's, was it Appearance Day, right? Yes. So it said, Advaitam Harinadvaita Acharyam Bhakti Shangshainat. He's known as Advaita because he's non-different from Lord Hari, and he's known as the Acharya because he preaches Bhakti Shangshainat, he preaches the devotional cult. This is actually the quality of the Acharya. Prabhupada in one purport recognizes the Acharya as the person who has no other desire than to spread Krishna consciousness. Now, in spreading Krishna consciousness, there will be obstacles. If you noticed in the purport, there was a lot of debating going on. There's a lot of opposition to what Madhvacharya was preaching. And various strategies were used to try and defeat him. It's not the purport is actually quite cryptic. A lot of these pastimes can be unpacked. For example, it was mentioned how his books were stolen. So the idea here was the opposing team, they had a plan, we will defeat Madhva by stealing his books. So when it comes to the debate, he'll have no reference. But actually Madhvacharya was so learned that he knew the Vedas by heart. In fact, one time his teacher admonished him, told him, you know, you're spending so much time in sporting activity. We know he was very strong. Now, who was he? Who was he an incarnation of? Who can tell me? Vayu, Hanuman, Shiva. Never heard that one. There's one missing. There's actually another option. Bhima. Now, actually, so Bhima, Hanuman, Vayu, they're all the same personality. Bhima is an incarnation of the Vayu. Hanuman is an incarnation of Vayu. And Madhvacharya is an incarnation of Vayu. And actually, if you look at his life, sometimes he exhibits some of the qualities of those personalities. For example, it's mentioned how he was traveling to Badarik Ashram. So he was so impatient to get there, he started jumping from mountain peak to mountain peak. Now, I don't know what his followers were doing. They probably arrived several weeks later. But you see, this is Hanuman. Hanuman is this kind of quality. He likes to leap across oceans and so forth. Another example, one time, I think I had an older sister who was babysitting. Anyway, he took a barrel of dal and he consumed the whole lot. So we know this is like Bhima. You know, Bhima is known as Vrikodara. He's a voracious eater. So he manifested those qualities. And Vayu, now it's mentioned here how this merchant boat was passing by the ocean. It's said that when the boat got stuck on a sandbar, Madhvacharya, he took his upper cloth. Now he's Vayu, so then he motions with his upper cloth, creates this very strong wind, pushes the boat off the sandbar. So, you know, it's a wonderful story. Actually, I'll elaborate on this story because it's very interesting. It's not mentioned in the purport, but if you recall the purport, the captain offered anything on the ship that was available. But Madhvacharya is renounced. He doesn't want anything. But there's one thing at the bottom of the boat. It's to balance the boat. It's Gopi Chand. It's not very, from a material point of view, it's not very valuable. So the sailors, they would use big chunks of Gopi Chand to balance their ships so they didn't capsize. So he asked, yes, I'll take this Gopi Chand. And as the purport explains, it cracked open. Actually, there's different stories. One story, there were two lumps of Gopi Chand. One broke open to reveal Balaram and one broke open to reveal Krishna. Anyway, this is kind of, so Krishna was revealed in this Gopi Chand. And it's explained how even 30 people were unable to lift this massive chunk of Gopi Chand. The deity was so heavy, but Madhvacharya himself was able to carry it to Udupi. Anyway, there's a backstory to this. Is this deity has a history. Now, it's described when Krishna was in Dwarka. Now, he revealed his childhood pastimes to Devaki. Because, you know, Devaki, she had to bear separation from Krishna at the time of birth. So she never got to experience the childhood pastimes of Krishna. So he revealed those pastimes. He took the form, you know, Balagopal, and sported and showed so many pastimes for the satisfaction of Devaki. But then the queens of Dwarka, they wanted to experience this as well. So they asked Krishna to assume this form. But this was inappropriate because they're queens. They're married to Krishna. So what he did was he manifested in the deity form as Balagopal. So this Udupi Krishna is known as Balagopal. In fact, it's also known as Nartaka Gopal. This is in the next verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, and this deity was worshipped by Rukmini. Now, when Krishna left the planet with his retinue, at that time, Arjuna, what to do with this deity? So he submerged the deity in a lake, and they got covered in mud. Hence the Gopi Chand, the deities in this form. So then, you know, as we see this happening a lot, deities, they can disappear, they can be underground for so long. But then there's always a pastime, and so this is the part of the same pastime. So this same Udupi Krishna is the same deity that Rukmini worshipped. So anyway, we were talking about the cloth, yes. So Madhvacharya, he's Vayu. So just by the motion of his cloth, he was able to push the boat away. So as Vayu and as Bhima and Hanuman, as we know, they are all very, very strong. So if you were paying attention to the purport, there were so many pastimes of how he killed a snake when he was only 5 and how a wrestler was unable to pull his toe off the ground. This is the strength. But for us, you know, it's nice to hear of the physical strength of Madhvacharya. But for us, the spiritual strength is what we actually benefit from the most. So what was his particular contribution? What was he famous for? Who can say? Philosophically, what is he famous for? Yes. Dvaitavad, yes. So Dvaitavad. Dvaita means duality. So the famous pose is Madhvacharya is holding up. Maybe it's his hand. Can't remember. Yeah, it's his hand actually. I've seen a picture anyway. He's holding up 2 fingers. It means defeating of Advaita. Those who were there for the class yesterday, Ramanuja Prabhu was talking about one Mayavadi, and his pose was like this, 1 finger up. So Mayavadis, this is their little mudra. So to counteract, Madhvacharya is this mudra. So of all the 4 acharyas, they all have the same philosophy, but it's a slightly different angle. So there's slight differences, but they're not important differences. But of the 4, the one that leans most strongly to duality is Madhvacharya, his philosophy, when it's known as Tattvavad. Actually, there's a slight difference between Tattvavad and Tattvavadis. The Tattvavadis have a misconception of Tattvavad. So we as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we generally accept what the Tattvavadis say, but there are a few differences. But we accept Tattvavada, because Tattvavad just means speaking the truth. Tattva means truth, and it's in direct opposition to Mayavad. Mayavad means speaking illusion, so it counteracts. So we accept Tattvavad, but our understanding of Madhvacharya and how the Tattvavadis understand Madhvacharya is slightly different. And there's an interesting discussion in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and it's in this chapter, of how when Lord Chaitanya, he came to Udupi, he could sense that the Tattvavadis had some pride. Now at first, the Tattvavadis didn't want to associate with Lord Chaitanya because they thought he was a Mayavadi. Now, he took sannyas from Kejva Bharati, from the Mayavad school. So they did not want to touch him, basically. But when they saw his ecstasy, and it's described how he visited Balagopal deity, and he was experiencing ecstasy. When they saw his ecstasy, they became very attracted. So Lord Chaitanya took this opportunity to speak with them. So he asked them, what is sadhana sadhya sreshta? What is the best process and the best goal? So they answered, or their acharya answered. He said, Varnashram Dharma Krishna Samarpana. The sadhana is to worship Krishna through the Varnashram system. Now this is quite similar to the answer that Ramananda Roy gave, which Mahaprabhu rejected as external. And as for the goal, they said Panchavida Bhakti. Panchavida Mukti, 5 types of liberation. So their goal is to become liberated. There's five types of liberation. Now Mahaprabhu, he rejected this, and he gave various reasons. He said that regarding Panchavidamukta, he said Narayana. He said Salokya Sarsti Samipya Sarupya Kanta Aputa Diyamanam Nagrinanti Binamat Sevanam Jana. It's a verse from the third canto. He said that devotees of the Lord, if they have to give up service to the Lord, they will not accept any of the five types of liberation. Therefore, the desire for liberation, this is considered a contamination of jnana. Jnanis, they want liberation. So this is a jnana mishra. It's not pure devotion. And regarding karma, the desire to practice within varnashram, that is karma mishra. It is a contamination of karma. So Mahaprabhu, he said to them, Narayana parasarvi nakutascha nabibhiti svargapavarga narakesh apituyata darshana. Now the devotees of the Lord, those that have pure love for the Lord, they don't care, they see no difference between heaven, hell, and liberation. In other words, we're not restricted to practicing devotional service within Varnashram system. Therefore, we can even reject the Varnashram system. Now, it is worshipable system because it's the best for practicing devotional service. It's most compatible, but we don't insist on it. Therefore, he showed that he was beyond their rules, beyond their restrictions in how they worshipped, and he had a better understanding of the goal. So he offered an alternative. Shravanam kirtanam Vishnu, smaranam parasevanam, archanam vandanam dasyam, sakyam atmanavedanam, iti pum sharpita Vishnu, bhaktis chen navalakshana, kriyetta bhagavachada, tanman editam uttamam. He said, the highest process is to perform the ninefold processes of devotional service. By doing so, performing those directly to Krishna, that is considered the highest knowledge. So in this way, he actually defeated them. And what's interesting is they said, that's correct. However, because Madhvacharya has taught us this way, we will remain with this conception. And actually in the Bengali, it's called Sampradaya Sambandha. For them, their connection with the Sampradaya was to stick with those teachings. And Prabhupada, he translates it as party policy. Sambandha. Sampradaya Sambandha, he means party policy. So this is our, the Gaudiya perspective on Madhvacharya. And there's more about the Gaudiya perspective, and that is can be found in Navadip Dham Mahatmya. This is a very interesting scripture written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And it describes how actually all the four Sampradaya Acharyas, that's what they're called, the founders of the Acharyas, that's Nimbarkacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, and who am I missing? Madhvacharya, of course. So they're referred to as Sampradaya Acharyas. So it's described in Navadip Dham Mahatmya that all four of them went to Navadvip and they had darshan of Lord Gauranga. This was before the appearance of Lord Gauranga. But none of them revealed this. He gave instructions to each one of them and he told them to carry on and gave them particular mission. But he said to them, do not reveal who I am, etc. So Madhvacharya, when he was in Navadvip with his disciples, he had a dream. And in that dream, Lord Chaitanya came and he told him, please extensively preach this Dvaitavad, this dualistic system, and smash the Mayavadi system. That was his instruction. And also establish deity worship. Now, these are the two particular aspects of the Madhva Sampradaya that Lord Chaitanya took. We know that he took two from each Sampradaya. So it's called Kevali Advaita Nirasana, the complete defeat of Mayavad, and Krishnamurti Sevana, the worship of the deity. These are two very important principles. And we, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we accept those as two of the eight principles that we honor. Now, it's interesting that who can defeat Mayavad? This is very difficult. I mean, we worship the deity, but how to defeat Mayavad? And there's a lot of Mayavad philosophy out there, so we have to be very active in trying to defeat it, trying to understand it and defeat it. And it's very much our line. know, when Arshula Prabhupada, he composed the poem to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, there was one verse in particular: "Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved, impersonal calamity, thou hast moved." This particular stanza, it stuck out to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he would glorify Srila Prabhupada in connection with this stanza, and he would show other people, look, he is understood. So this is the business of the Acharya. I mentioned how the Acharya teaches bhakti. Now, here's an interesting aspect to being an Acharya. Being an Acharya means you will get opposition. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has written extensively about this, and he explains that the way to glorify and bring about the appearance of the Absolute cannot be sufficiently done through the positive approach, which means to glorify Krishna and discuss his pastimes. He says the negative approach, which means exposing untruth, that is even better for bringing about the appearance and glorification of the Absolute. And he says further, it is the duty of anyone who has even had a glimpse of Krishna to faithfully follow this policy and to preach against untruth, even if it means causing a disturbance. And by doing so, you will be opposed. So there's so much opposition. We know in the lives of our acharyas, we read how there was so much opposition. Some of them were even threatened. Some of them were, attempts were made to poison some of them. There's so much opposition. But that is the duty of the acharya, and that is what makes the acharya glorious, that he's not prepared to act on bodily platform. He's prepared to preach even at the risk of his life. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, to materialists, it may look like the acharya is being tortured, but actually they're above, they're completely transcendental to this material world. Therefore, they are untouched by all the apparent disturbances that people create. So it's very, you know, it's very important. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, he... Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Shri 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 Ram Lakshman Hanumana ki, Shri Shri Gornitai ki. Srila Prabhupada, in his pranam mantra, which he gave us, you know, there's only two things mentioned. Saraswati Devi, on the order of Sarasvat, Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschachari Sitarani, and Gauravani Pracharani. He came to preach Gauravani Prachar and to deliver Nirvasesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarani. The two things. You notice how one is positive, one is negative. To defeat Mayavad and to preach Gauranga's cult. So the two go hand in hand. So this is our challenge. Because we see just in the recent history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, we've had these very powerful acharyas and they've had a very big effect in defeating Mayavad. So it's our duty to somehow carry on this mission. And we shouldn't be wimps when it comes to preaching. We should be strong. You know, as Ramanuja yesterday, Ramanuja Prabhu was saying, you know, I'm not against bridge preaching, but he was obviously not so in favor of bridge preaching. He goes, Maha Mantra is the bridge. You know, we don't need this bridge preaching. You know, just the Maha Mantra is the bridge. I'm in Maya and Krishna's there and the Maha Mantra is going to take me there. So bridge preaching is good. And the acharyas, they have been very expert at doing this. But what we shouldn't do is, when bridge preaching becomes watered down, then that's not very good at all. So we have to keep very strong in our own belief. In other words, we bring people to our side of the bridge. We don't go to their side of the bridge. That's what bridge preaching really means. Actually, the best bridge preaching I like is when they used to write the Gauranga, or put the Gauranga posters on bridges. I think it's very, very good. And there's still a few around, I think. But I don't travel up to Scotland, so I don't see them. But actually, it's very powerful. I mean, I don't know if near Heathrow, there's one bridge. People might know it. It says, give peas a chance. You ever seen this one? You see, practically half of the people know about this. So imagine you had the Gauranga Bridge, and half the people would know about that. Half the world who travel along the M25 would know about it. So it's very good preaching. I liked it. But we're a bit softer now. We're trying to be more like nice people, and we follow rules, and we don't do graffiti and things like that. Anyway, so we were talking about the we're going back to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So, because I digressed there, we were talking about Navadeep Dham Mahatmya. So I mentioned, then he particularly, Lord Chaitanya said, you preach those two things. You defeat Mayavad and you establish deity worship. But then Madhvacharya said, when will I get to see you again? He said, do not worry. You secretly worship me and you will attain me. So therefore, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Madhvacharya was secretly worshipping Lord Chaitanya. Interesting. Actually, all the Acharyas were secretly worshipping Lord Chaitanya. And you can read it in the Navadvipa Mahatmya. I'll say a little bit more about the Acharya, because I was reading about some of what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was saying. He made an astonishing statement. He said, unlimitedly more glorious than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is his Acharya, his representative. Quite an astonishing statement, right? Now, that doesn't mean that the Acharya is Vishnu Tattva. It's a very big mistake to do that. But he's unlimitedly more glorious. So what do you think he meant by that? He doesn't actually explain, but I have my own ideas. I just want to know if anyone else has the same idea. Why would the Acharya be even more glorious than Krishna? What would be the meaning? Srinivas Prabhu. He makes the mercy more accessible to others. That's what I was thinking too. There's actually a wonderful statement in the Charitamrita. Guru Rupi Krishna Kripa Karena Bhaktagani. That Krishna's mercy comes in the form of the Guru. It's also said, Jivi Sakshat Nahitati Guru Chaitya Rupi. Shiksha Guru Hoi Krishna Mahant Swarup. That the Chaitya Guru cannot be accessed. Therefore, Krishna appears as Mahant Swarup. The Mahant means the pure devotee, the great devotee. Therefore, the Mahant is even more glorious than Krishna, because Krishna is hidden. The Mahant is the manifestation of Krishna, who is non-different from Krishna. Acharya mam vijaniyan nava manyata karichit namarcha buddha bhut suyeta sarva deva mayo harihi. That the Acharya is non-different from myself. This is Uddhava. This is Krishna speaking to Uddhava. The Acharya is non-different from myself and should never be considered to be an ordinary human being. Should never be blasphemed in any way, never be disrespected, for he is the representative of the demigods. Now also, that's from the 11th canto. Also the 11th canto, there's a lovely verse. Naivo payancha pachitam kavayastavesha buddha yushapi kritam rida muda smaranta yantar bahis tanubritam ashuban vidunvan acharya chaitya vapusha svagatin vyanakti. And this is, who's speaking now? I'm trying to remember who's speaking this. Actually, it's Uddhava speaking. And he's glorifying Krishna. And he says, even within the lifetime of Lord Brahma, the sages are unable to express their gratitude to Krishna, who comes in two forms to purify us and show us the path. Acharya Chaitya Vapusha Swagatim Vyanakti. He shows the path as the Acharya and as the Chaitya Guru. So these are the two manifestations of Krishna that are particularly important for us in our conditioned state, because he instructs us through the Acharya and through the Chaitya Guru. So even within the lifetime of Lord Brahma, we cannot understand, we cannot express our gratitude. So we should have this mood of gratitude towards the Acharya. Now sometimes, you know, we may be hard-hearted, we may be nonchalant, indifferent. That's not a nice mood to have. We should aspire to be overwhelmed with gratitude at the Acharyas, the line of Acharyas who have come to teach us. And that is the right attitude. And if we don't have that mood, we should at least remember that that's the mood we should have. Because if we're ungrateful, this is not beneficial for our spiritual life. We can understand that, for example, Srila Prabhupada, he's given us so much. You have his books. Where would we be without Srila Prabhupada? So that should invoke a mood of gratitude. Now, discussing the Mayavad again, there was one particular disturbance in our society. We know that Srila Prabhupada was so accommodating. He very rarely would he ever tell someone to leave the society, right? He was very, very accommodating. And as far as people coming to live in centres, he was also extremely accommodating. There was one incident where the local authorities decided, they passed a rule. They said, woman, single woman with children should not be allowed to stay in our temple. So they had a big list of rules, proposals. And they gave them to Srila Prabhupada. This is one temple in America, I forget where. He went through the list, and he was looking at them. Yes, 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 yes. Then he came to that one, and he stopped. And he just said, I don't think this is very good. Everyone should have the chance to become Krishna conscious. So they scrapped the rule. Therefore, if we follow that nowadays, then any single woman with a child should be given shelter. They could come and practice pure devotional service in a Hare Krishna temple. So we see the very accommodating nature of Srila Prabhupada. So I mention this because there was one occasion where he expelled several senior devotees from the Hare Krishna movement. We know this example. And it happened in New Brindavan. Four senior devotees started saying that Prabhupada is Krishna. He's actually God himself. And he's gone back to India because we haven't recognized who he was, and he's not coming back. This is what they said. And it caused so much disturbance, because in those days, people just had a very simplistic understanding of devotional service, of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Now we're more savvy. We understand that this is bogus. And it's explained that at that time, so many devotees were just walking away. They just left ISKCON. They were walking down the hill. So Prabhupada, he took the unprecedented action of expelling them. But he said, they can preach, become purified, and return. Now at that time, he said, this is Mayavad philosophy. So it's interesting, how is it Mayavad philosophy to say that the Acharya is God? Now there's one letter where he explains, and he's writing to two devotees. One of them's called Ishana. It's a letter, you can find it in the folio. And in the letter he's discussing, he says, this is a serious philosophical deviation. And he says, you may have seen the picture of Madhvacharya. He's holding up two fingers. And he explains, the guru is never Krishna. He said, this is Mayavad. If you say the guru is Krishna, then one day you may become guru. Therefore, you become Krishna. And so that's why it's Mayavad, you see. So this is a wonderful explanation of how Prabhupada took shelter of the philosophy given by Madhvacharya. Now, we have a few minutes left. I'll look at the purport. There's so many things I would like to say, but we've run out of time. I'll say a few more things about the learning of Madhvacharya. I mentioned how he had the scriptures memorized, so he could recite the Vedas. So when his teacher chastised him for being so sporting, he just recited the Vedas. So he proved how he'd actually learned everything, and he was able to completely repeat everything his teacher had taught him. Now, there are other instances where the great learning of Madhvacharya is brought out. On one occasion, he was debating, and he said, every verse of the Vedas has three meanings. Every verse of the Mahabharata has 10 meanings. And every name of Vishnu in Vishnu Sahasranam has 100 meanings. So he was challenged. You know, how can you say this? Where's your evidence? So he took first name of Vishnu, took the word Vishva, and then he gave 100 straight away, immediately like torrent of wind. Like he just gave an immediate 100 explanations of the name Vishva, what it means. And his audience, they said, stop, you've lost us, you know, this is too difficult for us. So he didn't go any further. So this is an example of the learning of Madhvacharya. And if you notice, you'll find in Prabhupada's purports, because it's not mentioned here, but he actually wrote a commentary on the Bhagavatam as well. You'll find so many purports, Srila Prabhupada quotes Madhvacharya. And I can think of one in particular, where he gives three verses from the Padma Purana, which defeat Mayavad. And they all say the same thing. One of them is, Yo Haresh Chai Vajivanam Beda Vakta Hare Priya. One who speaks the difference between the Jiva and Krishna is very dear to the Lord. Beda Vakta. Vakta means someone who speaks. So Beda Vakta is someone who speaks difference. So this is the Padma Purana evidence that it's actually better to speak Dvaita than to speak Advaita. The Lord likes it when we distinguish. And actually, even Bhakti Thakura says, from the point of view of the jiva, difference is prominent. From the point of view of the Lord, oneness is prominent. So we don't get it mixed up. We are jivas. Therefore, we should emphasize Bheda Vakta. We are different. We're different from Krishna. So I'll stop here because we have a few minutes left. Thank you for your time. Hare Krishna. And hopefully someone can have some comment or question. Like to say anything in glorification of Advacharya.